Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Mercy Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Gaza, once again under attack as early on Saturday morning, Israeli warplanes started bombing the area. Sporadic bombings by Tel Aviv still continues, and so far, at least two Palestinian teenagers have been killed and several others injured. This is the same Gaza that has been under siege for 11 years, the same Gaza that 90% of its water not drinkable, and the same Gaza that the international community gives lip service to, but not much help in resolving this continual tragedy. Stay with us as we take a look at the latest situation in Gaza. We're going to cross over to Gaza City. Get the latest from Press TV's correspondent Ashraf Shannon and the latest situation on the ground there. Ashraf, can you please fill us in?
Yes, Marzi, for the past 17 hours, the Israeli warplanes carried some 60 airstrikes and tank shelling on the Gaza Strip, prompting retaliation from Palestinian resistance factions, mainly Hamas's military wing, the Qassam Brigades, who fired a barrage of homemade rockets towards Israel in retaliation for this Israeli brutality against the Gaza Strip. In the evening, Israeli fighter jets attacked an abandoned building in the middle of Gaza City near a public park, killing two children and injuring 10 others. Earlier during the airstrikes, three other people were also injured. And as you mentioned about the overall humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is extremely dire. Nearly all of Gaza's underground water is polluted. The beaches are polluted. And also, people in Gaza have to struggle with 4 hours of electricity every day. And hospitals in Gaza lack the necessary surgical supplies and medicines to deal with the patients and those wounded since the beginning of the Great March of Return. Let me just say, just from yesterday, since Friday, Israel has killed three children in Gaza, all of them aged 15, two of them aged 15 and one aged 16. And it shows you the kind of callous disregard that the Israeli regime has for the value of human life, especially when the human life we're talking is a Palestinian human life.
All right, thank you so much for that update. Very sad story. Indeed, unfolding once again out of Gaza City. Press TV's Ashraf Shannon. I'd like to welcome my guest out of Madison, Wisconsin, Dr. Kevin Baird, to the program, author and Middle East expert. Thank you so much for being with us. Kevin, why do you think Israel has launched these latest attacks against the Gaza Strip at this time?
Well, I think Netanyahu is looking to provoke more strife and possibly a larger war. The long-term game plan for Netanyahu has always been to find a way to try to kindle a major Middle Eastern war that would allow him and his even more genocidal accomplices like Lieberman, who's expressed this openly, to finish the genocidal ethnic cleansing of Palestine that they started in 1948 and have been continuing at a somewhat slower pace ever since. They face what they consider to be a demographic time bomb, and they imagine that they will have a demographically pure, racially purified so-called Jewish state, and that would require essentially expelling the remaining of the non-Jewish residents from the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Of course, Israel believes that it has been given by God all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates, and some Zionists want even more than that. So this is all part of a long-term expansionist game plan. The Palestinians have refused to die off and go away. They've put one major impediment in the path of the Zionists. And then the 9/11 triggered plan to destroy seven countries in 5 years has bogged down thanks to the resistance of Iraqis and others in the region. So Netanyahu and others among the hardline Zionist faction who want to move their game ahead towards larger war and ethnic cleansing need to continually try to find ways of provoking incidents. Mm-hmm. And they often will start something like this in order to trigger retaliation from the other side, which then becomes an excuse for even further escalation.
Well, Kevin, let's look at what you just said. Often they want to do something to trigger some type of reaction, and it causes them to have like an excuse to do what they're doing. But I mean, if we look at what has been what happens continuously in the Gaza Strip, these people are under a just severe amount of pressure constantly. 11 years of being under the siege, not being able to go out, very little supplies getting in. As I said in my intro, 90% of the water is actually polluted by sewage. 2 to 4 hours of electricity a day. And we see now, since March 30th, the protests that have been taking place, peaceful protests, that over 140 Palestinians have been killed, over 15,000 have been injured. How do they protest all of these injustices? What are they to do? Because no matter what turn they make, they're being killed.
That's right. The Palestinians are in a very tough position, and really they have no choice but to continue with the resistance across the whole spectrum of resistance activities, from continual peaceful protest, which never gets reported in the Western media, to more forthright acts of resistance, including the recent kite flying with burning kites to set fire to some of the agricultural lands outside the concentration camp walls of the Gaza Strip, to these small-time rockets. They're essentially showing that they won't go away. That's really all the Palestinians can do. However, that is perhaps more than enough to ultimately win in the long term. You know, there's a great article from a few years back by that American professor who calls himself the war nerd. And he predicts that Palestine will be victorious over the Zionists, and it's ultimately because they can handle more punishment. And so by simply refusing to go away and continuing with the full spectrum of acts of resistance and winning sympathy from around the world, including sympathy from those few countries like Iran that have enough courage and independence to stand with the Palestinians, ultimately the Palestinians will prevail.
Well, thanks so much for that analysis. I was waiting for our guest out of New York to join us. Hopefully, she will join in this conversation soon. But, Kevin, looking at this situation now, some analysts say that with Donald Trump in the U.S. White House, that the Israelis feel more emboldened than ever. However, isn't it true that really, especially the last couple of decades, Israel has basically had the unconditional support of Washington? Do you see a difference during this tenure of Donald Trump or not?
Well, the difference is that Trump has stripped away a lot of the hypocrisy that has characterized U.S. policy and shown the true face of a lot of aspects of U.S. foreign policy, including policy towards occupied Palestine, which is the face of the ugly American. So Trump, by moving the embassy to Jerusalem in as a complete violation of international law, of a long list of UN resolutions, and of the essentially unanimous international position that every square centimeter of territory that Israel stole in its war of aggression in 1967 has to be returned to the Palestinians, this actually has changed the game. And now everybody knows, whether we're talking about even the Palestinian Authority, a bunch of quislings in the pay of the West, or the even countries in Europe and around the world, all know now that this so-called two-state solution peace process that started with Oslo is a big lie, and it always was. The Zionists never intended to give up any meaningful amount of territory. Their war of expansion in 1967 was meant to permanently seize these territories that they stole. They're never going to give them back. There are more than 500,000 settlers squatting in these territories now. So when Trump essentially goes along with this Zionist intent to steal this land and says, that's fine, they can have it. We're moving our embassy to Jerusalem. What this does is it exposes the U.S. policy, which has always been a de facto accomplice in these Zionist crimes and genocide. So in a sense, Trump is actually doing the Palestinians a favor by exposing the truth and the reality of what's going on and showing just how evil and ugly the American position really is.
Well, it's interesting. I want to look at public opinion, Kevin. We see it's not as if Americans don't care about what happens. I mean, we have seen quite a reaction inside the United States in dealing with, for example, the illegal migrants and the children being separated from their parents and being imprisoned. And of course, we saw people turn out en masse, and we saw actually Donald Trump change his mind about parts of that, what he wanted to impose. However, when it comes to the Middle East, when it comes to specifically, let's look at the situation in Palestine. Now, of course, we see that from time to time, there are movements such as BDS and others that have been somewhat successful, but still, there is not that massive outcry when kids are being killed every day, when people are protesting peacefully, and Israeli snipers are shooting them in front of the cameras, when even reporters are being killed. Why does it seem that Americans don't care about this side of things?
Well, these crimes committed by the Israelis as a matter of policy are just being completely covered up by the mainstream media and most of the alternative media in the West. When somebody like Chris Hedges, the New York Times reporter, goes to Palestine and watches as repeatedly he sees the same thing happen over and over and over again. He watches as Israeli soldiers bark out obscene insults about the mothers of Palestinian children over megaphones in order to lure those Palestinian children within range of the soldiers' gun sights so they can be shot in the gut for sport. They're shot in the gut so they'll suffer as much as possible. This is what the Israeli army does as national policy. Not one of these Israeli soldiers that has shot down children in this way for sport. And there were 600 documented in a very short range of time by the International Medical Journal out of Britain. Not one of those soldiers has ever been given so much as a reprimand for any of this.
Okay.
So this is just one small example
here,
of
Kevin.
The ongoing brutality, and it
Stay
doesn't get reported
me,
because Zionists own the media.
I want to get Maxine Dover in on this discussion, unfortunately. We had some technical difficulties just joining us right now. Appreciate you being with us, Maxine, journalist and political analyst out of New York. Maxine, I don't know how much of the conversation you have heard, but your take on what is going on when we see the overall situation in Gaza, the deterioration in Gaza, and of course we see more Israeli attacks, whether we're talking about today or we're talking about during the peaceful demonstrations that have been taking place by the people in Gaza since March the 30th, and we see fatality after fatality or injury after injury. Why is that the case?
First of all, my apologies for the technical difficulties. We have had some trouble here in New York. The response that I have is that I have great empathy and sympathy for the people of Gaza, as do, I think, most of the population in Israel. The balance, of course, is that Israel has an obligation to its citizens to protect its border. I sincerely, sincerely believe that the people of Gaza are being used as tools to instigate problems, instigate tragedy between the people of Israel and the people of Gaza. The Israeli army is, without question, as is the army of every nation, obligated to protect its borders, to protect its people. Hamas is instigating actions against a military force that's obligated to protect its people. Is Hamas doing this and causing such difficulties at the border of Gaza to mask activities otherwhere in the world of the Middle East? That we don't know, but it's very possible that the instigation of actions against Israel in the south are some sort of a mask to look at a way of taking attention away from the possibility of other actions against Israel elsewhere. I certainly hope this is not the case, but any analysis has to look at all the borders, not just what's going on in Gaza. I particularly think that there are very few innocents here. The PA is not innocent because it may be stimulating Hamas for its own reason. The PA may be wondering how it can regain control in Gaza. And by causing difficulties for the people, they may be hoping that there will be a rebellion against Hamas.
Well Maxine, let me just jump in here, Maxine. Let me just jump in here. When we talk about, as you were speaking, we're showing images of the Great Return March as it's labeled by Palestinians. I'm asking you a question just from a humanitarian perspective. If people are under pressure from all sides, we know that they don't have access to health care, we know that they cannot leave the area, we know that they don't have water to drink, we know that they don't have adequate food, nourishment, we know that they're not free and not really living very much in a normal situation in any way. So when these people are under this type of pressure and they go and protest peacefully, I add, and they are shot by snipers in front of cameras, do you have a problem with this?
Oh, I have a major problem with the humanitarian aspect. I, as a mother, as a human, I feel horrendously sad and most empathetic to the troubles of the people of Gaza. They could not be experiencing this trouble. This difficulty in Gaza is a fairly new phenomenon. If we recall what was going on in Gaza, not much more than 10 years ago, when the governing force in Gaza was the Israeli government, there was commerce, there were shopping malls, there was electricity, there was water. These troubles of the people of Gaza have occurred since the takeover of Hamas, especially.
And then because the people of Gaza chose, they elected representatives that Tel Aviv didn't want, so then Tel Aviv cut off all of this. I want to look at, though, Maxine, as a journalist, would you say that this story is covered in the way that if this situation was happening in the middle of Europe, in the United States, in other places, is it really getting the plague that it should with these young people being killed all the time?
Look, young people throughout the world should be given the opportunity to develop their lives, to live their lives. The fact that they are getting killed in a conflict they did not make is horrendous. But this doesn't take away from the responsibility of the government of Israel to protect its young people, to protect its citizens and its civilians.
I ask you a specific question for a reason. Maxine, as a journalist, I'm speaking to you as a fellow journalist. Why doesn't this get the play in the United States and other places that it would if innocent protesters were being shot? Well, let us say if innocent protesters were being shot here in Iran, we know what kind of play that it would get as far as the media. If innocent protesters were being killed anywhere else like this, I'm sure the media would cover it. But when it comes to Israel, do you think that really the media is covering it in the way that it should?
You know, the assumption or the interpretation of media coverage of Israel as positive is not always so. Most of the European papers are, if anything, leaning away from positive coverage.
Come on, Maxine. We're talking about two people being killed yesterday, two kids being killed yesterday, and barely anything is being said right now in the United States or Europe. Let me get Kevin back in on this. We're actually running out of time. Kevin, what is it going to take? How long are we going to be sitting here having another discussion about what should be done? How do the Palestinians get out of this situation? What do they need to do?
Well, I think the only solution is going to be to arm the resistance with vastly stronger and better weapons, because unfortunately Maxine is absolutely wrong about the people of Israel. She said that they have sympathy for the suffering of people in Gaza. The polls prove that she's wrong. Virtually 100%, well into the high 90% figures of Israeli Jews, I'm not talking about Israeli Arabs, but Israeli Jews, have approved of all of the genocidal massacres of thousands of civilians in Gaza from Operation Cast Lead right up until today. And similar figures approve of the murders of unarmed protesters and kids by these snipers who are given the orders to kill. If any real ethical army would, the first time one of their troops actually shot an unarmed protester like this, that troop would be immediately court-martialed and perhaps put up against the wall and shot himself. But in Israel, these troops are national heroes. Lieberman is tweeting about them being heroes for crippling children, thousands of people injured and killed with exploding bullets. This is the most immoral army in the world, and it's not going to get fixed because the Western press is owned by people with the same tribal loyalties that Maxine has. They're people from Jewish backgrounds. They've been brainwashed as they grew up to believe that their tribe is under genocidal threat ever since the Holocaust, so they have the right to do anything in response, and they treat others the way that the perpetrators of Holocaust have always treated their
victims. What is it going to take, in your perspective, in order to remedy this situation?
I think it's going to take a pan for the peace. I think that the influence of the moderate Arab nations must be accounted for and must be listened to, and the arming of the people for the sake of further death and dismemberment of all sides is certainly not the answer. I think it is a political situation and a recognition of the humanitarian needs and the recognition of the kind of settlement, for example, that Olmert offered in 98. And to see if that kind of effort can be reestablished with the help of moderate Arab nations.
All right. My apologies to our viewers. First of all, the poor quality coming out of New York. Our apologies. But I'd like to thank Maxine Dover, journalist and political analyst, for joining us out of New York, and Kevin Barrett, author and Middle East expert out of Madison. As always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. Hopefully see you same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out from Tehran.